Thank you for joining us on Satellite Sundays.
Satellite Sunday, and it feels so, so good to be back.
It's good for you get your message, and you could, you know, it's like direct to consumer.
I've had a lot of pain, but there has been gain.
Think you're a big man. Treat you like you're a little man.
In attendance, for the millions watching around the world, let's get ready to suck it!
And what a way to start off the best damn 90-minute wrestling show on the internet, Off the Ropes with Jason and Chris. And we're here, as you may know, 10 o'clock every Monday night for the last hour of Raw. And some recap and some analysis. We got a great show. We actually planned today. Yes, we planned today. We have some itinerary, which is awesome. I know that we were waiting on Jason to get on in here. Let's see if he did that. Is this Jason here? Jason, what's up?
What's going on, Chris? How's everything?
Good, good. Jason is calling in from a cell phone today. Unfortunately, we had some issues going on technologically wise. We had to step out of the studio. Where are you calling from? Brooklyn, right? You're home?
Calling from Brooklyn. I'm home, getting ready, just watching some Raw, catching up, see what's going on, see Vinnie Max in the ring.
He is. And it makes it difficult sort of to listen. I hate when we go on in this talking segments because it makes it real difficult to sort of listen to what the person in the ring is saying when you got headphones on. But basically, to give people a little bit of a recap, there's a challenge that was laid out by Dean Ambrose to the game. We don't know if he's going to accept that yet. And, you know, Stephanie had her little PMS tirade. And now Vince looks to be having the same thing. Jericho thought, oh, wait a minute. Here we go. We have an itinerary, but we're going to cover this for the first couple of minutes here because – guess who's back?
Look who's coming out.
I'm about to turn all the lights off in my apartment right now. It's one of my favorite intros of all time, hands down. I liked his American Badass one when he first came back.
I did like it too.
Which is now our outro music, which we'll get to obviously at the end of the show. But this one, you can't beat this one as arguably the scariest dude on planet Earth right now.
When's the last time he came out when Vince called him out?
You know, he's never really been a fan of listening to Vince's authority. But, you know, this is the thing, though. It doesn't even look like The Undertaker right now because I understand the dude's in his 50s and he's not like he was back in the Attitude Era. But he looks like he's just melting off his skeleton, man. He is skinny. And, you know, he actually looks taller than he did back because he is so skinny now. But part of me loves this. Part of me is the little kid is coming back. And I'm like, yeah, Undertaker, woo. And part of me is, all right, just get it over with already. You know, the dude's been in the business for 30 years.
Here's a fun fact for all the wrestling fans out there that probably never knew this, but the Steiner brothers, you remember the Steiner brothers, right, Chris?
Yeah, of course. Mostly from WCW, but yeah.
All right, so back way back when, before Undertaker stepped foot in WWE, he was known as Mean Mark Callis, and he had a tag team partner called by the name Dan Spivey, and they were called the Skyscrapers. So pretty much Scott Steiner invented a move specifically for those two guys called the Frankensteiner, which everybody now today calls the Hurricanrana, and some people know it as the Frankensteiner, but that was that move was invented primarily for the Undertaker and his tag team partner. Just a little fact I'll throw out there, a little trivia.
I can't picture either of those two guys doing a Hurricanrana if you look at like who uses it and what it is. But
right.
That's a little trivia fact, though. They ever had like a wrestling trivia night at the bar or something, that would be perfect for it. There is – normally we start to show off with a bang, a little bit of throwing back and forth with each other, but we happen to just come in air here. I walked into the studio and boom, Undertaker's on the television. So for those of you who still may not be aware of what we do here for the 90-minute recap, the 90-minute show rather, part of it's a recap of Raw, part of it's the last hour of Raw as we sort of discuss and go over what we've seen, what's happening, what we think is going to happen based on what we're seeing on the screen. I noticed his Sarah tattoo has been covered up. That's pretty cool. And then we also have an itinerary of things that we're going to talk about on tap for tonight before Taker starts talking. Shane videos and him training for WrestleMania and Hell in a Cell against The Undertaker. We're going to talk about a little bit of that WrestleMania match coming up, if we like it, if we don't like it, and why. A recap of exactly what we're about to see. What's wrong with the tag team division? Stone Cold podcast. He felt that the creative team books the Wyatt family as a travesty. What did he mean by that? We might carry over a little bit from last week with the top five mic workers. JR versus Michael Cole, if possible, as Vince McMahon looks like he's going to get chokeslammed here. And what do we really think is best for business? So that's going to really be the itinerary, but 90 minutes is an awful lot of time to cover. So we are going to – I'm going to turn this up, see if you can hear it in the background here.
I really feel like they should open up Raw with this segment and had Triple H and Dean Ambrose deal with it later.
True. I agree, but they've got to keep people watching, though. I mean, for a lot of people right now, with as sour as WWE has been to a lot of people, this is the only thing that they want to see. If they had it go first, they may have turned it off by now.
That's true.
And, you know, they used to be masters at doing that. It used to be the Attitude Era back in the day, and I noticed I was watching a couple of old clips, and wow, he only had a couple of quick words for Vince. That was very Undertaker-like, very Undertaker-esque. I was watching some of the old ones from 99, 2000, 2001, and you notice this, what they used to do is they used to have guys like The Undertaker, guys like Kurt Angle, guys like Triple H, wrestle in like the first match if they weren't a champion because
right.
they were the big names, and it keeps people watching. They say, oh, geez, Triple H wrestled first or Undertaker wrestled first. Well, what's going to happen next? Instead of giving them a bunch of undercard and midcard guys and not getting to them to the second hour. So they used to be smart about it. Now, I think this was a smart decision to do it where they did it. But for those of you who may have seen the videos out there, WWE segued perfectly for what we were going to talk about here. And that was the Shane McMahon training videos for WrestleMania. Did you like those videos? Did you like the thing that they're really pumping this as if Shane even has a prayer?
I like it. Because, you know, now he's speaking to a lot of people that probably don't remember Shane being, you know, athletic from his previous encounters in the past. But I like it. Considering if you look at Undertaker right now and you look at Shane training, you would probably believe that Shane could at least last more than 10 minutes in the ring with him, no?
He's quicker, for sure. Even in his old age today, he's quicker. But, you know, reality wants me to say, being a realist, it wants me to say that as soon as Undertaker gets a hand on him, it's over. But who knows? I mean, who really knows? Undertaker's not what he used to be either. He's old now and everything. So who really knows? But now I'm sort of looking at this match a little bit. And, I mean, this is a big-time storyline here. We touched on this a little bit last week. And it's obviously for those of you who may not know. I mean, if you're listening to a wrestling show, you probably do. But this is what happened last week on Raw. Bombs were dropped, and what happens is, if Shane McMahon wins in the cage, he gets full control of Monday Night Raw, therefore pretty much full control of the company. Undertaker takes another loss at WrestleMania, further tainting his legacy as, you know, as the man of WrestleMania. But if Undertaker wins, Shane McMahon is done, and they really wasted that comeback segment. So reality, being a realist, tells me that obviously Shane's going to win somehow. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know how they're going to spin it. The only way, I was thinking about it last night, the only way that Shane could still be useful and Shane could still get what he wants and The Undertaker still gets to keep his legacy is if the match ends in a no contest. But, is that even possible if both men are counted down? Do they even do 10 counts? Like, if both men are on their back flat, not moving, do they even do the 10 count in the cell?
I don't see it. You know what? I was thinking about it recently too. How do you make? You can't make the McMahons over the Undertaker at WrestleMania. Just bad for business. It's bad for his legacy. Picture that. The Undertaker is what 22, and then he'll be 22-2 with a loss to Brock Lesnar. Okay, we could understand that because it's Brock. He's legit, and someone who's, you know, the owner's son. That's just not good for business. I don't know how. Maybe they do another match the night after WrestleMania with, you know, it's winner takes all. Maybe that's the only way I can see how they can spin it. But I do like the training videos because it doesn't make it look like Shane's in good shape. So I don't know. I'm still on the fence with this, but I'm starting to lean towards Undertaker winning that match, and they're going to have to come up with another gimmick the next night.
You know, I don't really think it matters what shape Shane is in, quite frankly. I mean, it's Shane McMahon versus The Undertaker. This should be a given. But let me ask you this, though. Because of what's riding on it, and because of the fans like you and I coming out, wanting the old Attitude Era back, wanting that intensity, wanting some of these superstars back, is this, even though it's not going to be the main event, is this match, Hell in a Cell, arguably the most brutal match of all time in the history of the business, is this going to be the main, even though it's not the main event, isn't this match the true main event of WrestleMania? I mean, even over the Reigns thing, you know?
Well, it could be, but I honestly think that Ambrose and Lesnar is going to steal the show. Like, they're going to bring a little Attitude Era essence back. You know, I see a lot of steel chairs, tables being broken, somebody's falling off of a Titantron. I can see a lot of things happening in that match. I don't know. You know, Shane's a little older now, so I don't think he's going to try to take as much risk as he would, let's say, about 10 years ago.
Well, true. And the last time Undertaker was in a Hell in a Cell, maybe it was a cage. I'm trying to remember back. But it was against Triple H. And even that was pretty tame for what I thought the match was going to be. So,
right.
Yeah, neither guy really ready to take a lot of punishment. But to me, that's the real true main event because the Lambros. Well, technically it could be Lambros. But the Ambrose-Lesnar thing to me, it's a match that really, to me, was kind of like, all right, well, we have our main event set. Let's just throw this together to put them on the card. Like, to me, it doesn't – there was no build-up. There was no storyline. There was no – there was one match where Brock Lesnar felt he got screwed, and now all of a sudden, boom, they're fighting at WrestleMania. There was really no storyline buildup, whereas Attitude Era WWF would have built this up 2, 3, 4 weeks. Every week, the animosity would have gotten hotter. Going into WrestleMania, this would have been one of the hottest matches going in because they used to have a creative booking team that was able to do that. Now, you know, they're just so quick to book people in matches that they think, all right, the more superstars we have, the better. It doesn't always work that way because these matches have to make sense. They have to make sense. And that match really doesn't make sense to me. It's just they needed to find a place for two of them. They both had an open slot, and boom, there we are, and there's a match. So to me, I'm not a huge fan. But this match, to me, Shane and Undertaker, is the real true main event because I don't really care about Reigns and Triple H. That's – to me, that should be the first match and get it over with. You know, it won't be. But
yeah,
that's,
way, yep.
that is not a main event match to me. Raw is on commercial break right now, so that's why we're going over some of these topics. The Undertaker returned, said like four words, left. Vince McMahon promises he will be standing there having an apology from his son Shane. Who knows about that? I think that was sort of a wasted Undertaker segment as well. It took him 30 minutes to walk to the ring. Not really, you know what I mean. Took him like 30 minutes to get to the ring, comes in, says two words, and leaves. I don't really think that was the kind of buildup that they needed. Personally, the favorite recent Undertaker match buildup for WrestleMania was the contract signing when he came back and chokeslam Brock Lesnar through the table. That was probably the best that they've done for buildup. I didn't even like the Bray Wyatt chair lighting on fire thing. That was kind of a little corny, you know?
God, look how bad they treated the Wyatts. I mean, Bray is, he's amazing every week in the ring with his stable, and yet no one's challenging for a belt. No one's challenging for, challenging the authority. Like, they would be the perfect, I could see them being the only way Shane could win is if the Wyatts help. That's the only way I could see that happening.
Yes, I could see that. But then it wouldn't make sense because, you see, this is a little bit later on in the show, but I guess we can jump it up for the time being, is that it seems like WWE creative booking has no idea what to do with the Wyatts. They have no idea where to put them, how to book them, or how to write a storyline for them. So if that were to happen, logic says, we're going to see an Undertaker-Wyatt feud. But we're not going to probably see Undertaker again for 6 months after that match. So, or even longer than that, maybe. So, to me, it wouldn't make sense to have them interfere just because people interfere in this business to create rivalries and create feuds. It's not a one-and-done thing. To me, it would just be another wasted booking for them. It's just Stone Cold said on his podcast, for those of you who listen to the Stone Cold podcast, he worded it as a travesty how they booked the Wyatts. And that's really the case. I mean, the Wyatts, we've pointed this out several times, both on Satellite Sundays and on this show last week. The Wyatts win on Raw. They decimate people on Raw. They are amazing on Raw. They lose every pay-per-view match.
It's terrible.
I don't know. I would have, if I was writing creative booking for them, right now, you've got the new Undertaker, per se. Okay? You've got the new Ministry of Darkness, sort of, put it that way, okay? So I would have them sort of be near the top. I mean, I would have that group be the dominant force that everybody else has to sort of go against, because look at them, they should be. But right now, they're pretty much glorified jobbers, at least everybody but Bray and Braun Strowman. So I don't understand what they're doing with them. I'm sure that they have a plan. Again, not quite sure what that plan is going to be. But I'm really kind of hoping that the Wyatts start to get some better storylines before the prime of their career is over. And speaking of prime of their career being over, the Dudley Boys just came out against the Usos. Again, a match I just don't care about. The Usos, the face paint, the weird thing, it just doesn't do it for me. The Dudley Boys are 50 years old. The only reason they came back was because WWE was like, oh, crap, we don't have anybody worth putting on TV right now. So they brought the Dudleys back. And you watch them now, and they're just not the same Dudleys. I mean, they're slow. They're lethargic in the ring. They're very basic. It's just not, to me, I love the Dudleys, don't get me wrong, and that's part of one of our greatest tag team segments coming up in a few minutes. But not, to me, not, they should just sit home and just watch Raw and bring somebody up from NXT or something, because to me, I'm bored with them at this point.
They're the chicken parm of the tag team division. They're the Peyton Mannies. They need to sit down. They had a great run, early 2000s, late 90s, ECW, WWE. It's time to hang them up. They serve no purpose in this whole tag team division right now. They're holding somebody's spot. Whose spot is that? That's another debate.
Yeah, well, and we'll get into that in one second, because let me just ask you one more question here before we jump into this. Is this whole, bringing Undertaker back to face Shane and blah, 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 and bringing him back tonight, 5 weeks before WrestleMania, is that what's quote-unquote best for business, or are they just scrambling to do anything right now?
I think it's a little scrambling. I think Shane is actually legitimately training, so he's not going to be in Raw like that, which is good. You want to keep Shane away, let him train. I would have booked Undertaker to return the night of the Raw before Mania. That's when I would have booked Undertaker out. Not now, before.
That's what they usually do. I was surprised when I heard that he was going to be there tonight. I was real shocked. And now what are they going to do? Bring him out every week? Are they going to have him be the only time I've seen Undertaker on Raw more than one time before a pay-per-view was during the Brock Lesnar thing when they had 2 or 3 weeks of those two going back and forth. That's about it in the last 5, 6 years or so.
But that
the Dudley boys get the win here.
The Usos are just like, again, the tag team division is in a mess. Like, I like New Day and all, but they're not the Freebirds. And congratulations to the Freebirds for making it to the Hall of Fame.
You beat me to the punch there. First of all, for those of you who've never seen Jason Cordner, he kind of looks like Devon Dudley. So go on Google and look at Devon Dudley, and go on and look at CeeLo, and you'll see the similarities there. But the Freebirds inducted into the Hall of Fame. They're a little bit before. Well, I don't want to say a little bit, a lot before
they're,
my time.
They're before my time.
So but again, congratulations to them. You bring up a great point here. What is wrong with the tag team division? I think what is wrong with it right now is the New Day holding the title for as long as they did, because I understand the kids like them and younger, they bring sort of that funny element back, but they just, it's to the point where they're annoying now. I just can't, I can't get behind the New Day. I don't know if you like them, if you're a fan of them. I know you liked them when they first came out. I don't know what you feel about them now, but I just, they're just annoying.
I'm trying to figure out where does Unicorns and Booty come together. I'm still stuck on that, but they're running with it. I don't understand what the logic is, but they are running with it.
That they are, and to me, the fact that they've held it for this long shows that maybe WWE Creative doesn't exactly know where it is that they want to go. They don't know who they want to give the belts to, because, like you said, what is wrong with the tag team division right now? You've got the Dudleys. You're not going to put the belts on them. They're just there to sort of set the bar as the veterans. I don't think the Usos have earned it. The Lucha Dragons, they get crowd pop, but they're not tag team like, what we're used to seeing. League of Nations, we don't even know. There's no actual official tag team. It's just four guys. And so, they're not really a tag team division, which sort of leads us into our next topic a little bit, and that is the top five tag teams of all time, and who are they, and who are yours? And I know the Dudley boys probably register for a lot of people, but you got to say, and Jason, I know you have your list made out, and I'll get your list here, but you got to say the New Age Outlaws are near the top, right?
Oh, they were good. Are
they your number one?
Four. No, they're my number four. They're sitting on my number four slot.
Four? Who's your
number one? I gotta go old school. I gotta go with the Rockers. Even though the Rockers didn't have a lot of title reigns, Marty Jannetty and Shawn Michaels were great. I got the Hart Foundation at number two, and my number one tag team of all time, I have to go with the Road Warriors. And number five is
that's a good
Steiner
one.
Brothers. The Steiner Brothers number five. So I got
that's
Steiner
a good
Brothers.
I had forgotten about them.
So I got Steiner Brothers number five. I got New Age Outlaws. I mean, those two, just I didn't see them meshing and gelling the way that they did. And they were just so badass on the mic, in the ring.
Oh, you didn't know?
Right there, I like the New Age Outlaws because, to me, they had the crowd pop I mean, even when DX were heels, even during that 2000 era when the McMahon-Helmsley regime was around and they were basically just glorified hitmen, they still got that pop from the crowd. And Road Dogg and Billy Gunn, before Billy Gunn went down with the injury, again, the kayfabe was he got kicked out of DX, whatever, but they were the top. And, you know, you heard JR say in that clip, could they be the top of all time? Could be. To me, see, your wrestling knowledge in terms of trivia probably goes back a little farther. Mine is what I've experienced. And to me, based on what I've seen in my lifetime and watched being a wrestling fan personally with my own two eyes, I've got to put New Age Outlaws at the top. Simply because of that, I remember I used to sing along with that. As soon as that music used to hit, I can picture myself as a little kid sitting there.
Oh, you didn't know?
My mom would be like, "What are you talking about?"
Yo, ask for the call, somebody.
And then she'd get mad at me for cursing. So
aren't they in the Hall of Fame yet? They should be in the Hall of Fame.
That's a good question. I don't know. I thought they were. I just assumed that they were. But again, that's probably just me not doing my research. But I don't know because they're multiple time tag team champs. In fact, I'm gonna look it up here. I'm in front of the computer. The New Outlaws. And you see, they were even like outside of DX were. You know, their own entity and still
were
able to
be
successful.
Right, they were their own entity before DX. Yeah, before DX they were good.
I remember they tried to bring them back a little bit in 2015. Didn't really necessarily do too much for them.
They won the titles. I know they won the titles in the late, like between 2012 to 2015. They had a title run.
Yeah, they did that. They did that because they had to. I think they did that because it was the same sort of situation that they're in now where they were scrambling. They had to bring somebody back that was a familiar face. The guys were still in shape relatively, and they were able to, you know, sort of come back and compete. But they didn't last very long, just like I don't think the Dudleys are going to last very long here. But I'm looking at it, and you remember Road Dogg and Kay Quick, who is now R-Truth?
Yes, I remember that.
that was pretty awful, actually.
That was pretty awful. That was awful. God,
yeah, and R-Truth still looks identical to what he looked like back then. But yeah, the New Age Outlaws was, to me, the top team. They've got to be just because of what I've experienced in my life. Secondly, you know, I don't know if Rock and Sock Connection really counts because they only really had a couple matches and they weren't technically a team per se.
Right.
So I will put the Road Warriors there at two. Just because I was able to catch the tail end of their career, and I did go on and watch some videos and things of them from beforehand. So I'll probably put them at two. Three, man, I'll go with the Dudleys just because I remember watching them as a kid too, and they were pretty insane, pretty intense, the whole table thing and all that, and they were good. At four, Hardy Boys. Yeah, are you seeing the trend here? It's all attitude era.
Yeah,
for me. the Hardys, obviously, mostly because of Lita.
They were on my outside looking in. They were like my number six.
Honorable mention. Okay.
Yeah.
My honorable mention is Edge and Christian, simply because, yeah, they were pretty instrumental during the 2001 thing before they went off and did their own things, but they weren't quite there yet for me. Number five, I mean, I'd really probably have to think about that one here. Looking through the list, as right now it is Kevin Owens and Big Show, and Kevin Owens, a big dude, looks like a child against the Big Show. I'm looking here, World Wrestling Federation. You know, the Rockers, the Rockers were good, Michaels and Jannetty. I was a fan of them. Nasty Boys were good.
Nasty Boys, yeah.
Again, the Legion of Doom, Heenan. The Hearts. Okay, yeah, you had them on your list as well. I got to put the Hearts up on there. Headbangers, also in the honorable mention. Now, would you consider the Radicals to be a tag team?
Yeah, They were a tag team. They were legit.
Because to me, yeah, there was four guys. I enjoy, you know who else I enjoyed a little bit in the 2001 era? Just because I loved I still remember laughing here, was Kai and Tai. Remember Kai and Tai? And they had Taka Michinoku, all those guys, Togo, Funaki.
Yes.
Well, to me, I loved what they did there, and they were able to get Tajiri, who was really the only one who had a huge solo career, but Mr. Yamaguchi, that was just so racially funny to me, because it was just the most stereotypical, you know, they literally were in the ring like, hi-ya, oh-ya, you know, they would do the whole, they would make the stereotypical karate Asian sounds, and you know, obviously they'd have lawsuits up the wazoo that did that today, but back then I thought it was hilarious, and I still watch clips and I still think it's hilarious because it was just so blatantly racist, but it was awesome at the same time.
It was awesome. It was great. That's when they didn't care about the whole, you know, PG era. Oh, man, I miss the good old days.
Well, looking at it now too. All right, I'm looking at another one we got to look at, which we don't even have a tag team. I think that the New Day most closely represents this tag team in terms of the, you know, the fun loving kind of a thing. But you remember Too Cool?
Oh yeah, Scotty Too Hardy.
They were like the fun lovers. They used to dance.
Yeah,
Grandmaster Sexay, Scotty Too Hardy, and then Rikishi before he turned heel. They used to dance after everything. You know, they used to do. But you look at what they have now and the tag teams that they have now, and you look at what they had back then, a lot of these teams were teams at the same time. So they had like the New Age Outlaws, the Oddities, TNA, which was another good one that was very underrated. But TNA was a good one. Too Cool, Kai and Tai, The Union. You remember when Ken Shamrock and Mankind formed that up? Obviously, the Ministry of Darkness was a couple of other guys but teamed together. It wasn't just two guys. You know, the Job Squad, the Holly Cousins, the Headbangers, Rock and Sock Connection, Hardy Boys, Dudleys. They just all would be there at the same time. And tag team action used to be so much bigger than it is today. What I don't see is why they don't just form up some guys who are sort of drifters, okay, guys that don't really have an identity in the singles market, and make them something in the tag market. Because really, Road Dogg and Billy Gunn, other than being in DX, which was technically a tag team stable, whatever, didn't necessarily have distinguished solo careers before then. And now they go into that. That's where everybody knows them from. Then they can go from that and be anything that they want because they've got the crowd behind them. So, you know, you get some of these free radicals coming in now, and why don't they do that? Wow, look how much taller Lana is than Brie Bella. Holy cow.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if she has heels on or what, but wow. Anyways, but yeah, so what is wrong with the tag team division? I just think it's a lack thereof, and I think the reason that the New Day is what they are right now is because that's sort of what they have. That's all that they have to work with. And that's
but you know,
why they're.
You know what's funny about that, though? NXT has some great tag teams right now.
But I think it's sort of an ego thing. They're NXT, let them be NXT. You know, they're,
now,
I don't think that they don't feel like they're ready, kind of a thing. I don't know. I mean, really, I would like to see some more tag team action. I used to love some of those tag team actions. I mean, even in WCW, New World Order, New Blood, The Outsiders, Raven's Flock. You know, the stud stable, Team Canada. I mean, these guys, Vicious and Delicious, Buff Bagwell and Scott Norton, remember them back in WCW? So they were huge. Chronic was, I liked them, but some people didn't. Jersey Triad, High Voltage. I mean, these guys, the Booker brothers, Booker T and them, they were just, I don't know. To me, I think you asked the question, what's wrong with the tag team division? It's got to be really a lack thereof. It's pretty much what it's got to be. And another one that I'm looking at real quick, though, do you remember when you're looking at the old WWF Attitude Era tag teams, do you remember the Brood?
The Brood, yes. That's
I
pretty
used
much
to
where
love
Christian and Edge came from.
Edge came from. But again, they didn't really have the distinguished careers yet. Gangrel didn't pan out, unfortunately. So then they had to go on and sort of form their own thing. But even tag teams like the Brood that really were nothing until they joined the Ministry, and then they sort of became, even them, they weren't big-time tag teams. But even something like that I would take right now if I had the chance.
Oh, absolutely. But wouldn't it make sense if, like, even Luke and with the Wyatts, you could have them as a tag team, this monster.
Well, they do. They usually compete in tag team action.
I'm surprised they never put the belts on them. But then again, that goes back to booking and creative, not being able to find the right, you know, the angle to go with. But
well, I just don't think they can find. I don't think they can find an angle right now to give the Wyatts beef with them. But I mean, as sort of controlling and, you know, take over the world as Bray Wyatt is, I'm surprised he hasn't wanted to go after the tag belts. I'm surprised that they haven't really went after any belts. I mean, his whole thing is, you know, I want to take over. I want to be the face of fear. Not once have I heard the word title come out of his mouth. So I don't understand why they do it. But hey, that's why they're making the big bucks and we're sitting here doing a podcast, right?
There you go.
So let me ask you, do you feel that quote unquote best for business quote, as Stephanie and Hunter love to throw around, do you feel that the New Day is quote unquote best for business?
I think they're best for right now, not best for business. Best for business would be, I would be someone like Luke Harper and the Wyatts, you know, holding the belts. Or I would even maybe the Ascension. Like, look at Ascension; they're the longest reigning.
I'm not a big Ascension fan.
But like, I mean, if they were repackaged correctly, like to be real badass, it would work. Or even like, or repackage the Dudley, have them be like, you know, Bully Ray, like how Bubba Ray was in TNA. He was Bully Ray.
Yeah,
badass.
Sure.
He was like an Undertaker badass. And let's have Devon follow suit. Like, if they repackaged the Dudleys, they would be better for business. I mean,
Bubba Ray Dudley as Bully Ray was TNA world champion, mind you. I mean,
exactly.
he was the top guy in that industry, and he comes back here and he's a washed up tag team that only wins every couple weeks.
Exactly.
So,
you know, I mean,
look what they're doing with AJ Styles.
They're throwing him in a tag team with Jericho. That's not good. That's not best for business.
Well, I feel like maybe they would, and this is just me having a little bit of a bitter beef with the recent WWE creative. They might put the belts on AJ Styles and Jericho.
You think so?
I think so. Because the crowd loves them. The crowd loves Jericho. And AJ Styles, they want to make an impact. And I definitely feel like if there's a team that's going to take him, it's them. They're gaining a lot of steam right now. They are really, they seem to have thrown the Wyatts to the wolves, so to speak. I don't think, like I said, I don't think the Usos are ready. I don't think the Lucha Dragons are anywhere near ready. So,
well, Kalisto,
you know, I think that would be the one
champ.
Thinking.
Like, Kalisto's the U.S. champ. I mean, he should be defending that belt soon. Like,
well,
so
he is,
matches.
But you look at them tag team-wise, they just don't look to me like tag team champions. And, you know, that's another thing about the Attitude Era, is back then, guys looked the part. I mean, the Acolytes, which, by the way, I think I'm going to bump up into number five or four right there, the Acolytes. They, in before they were APA, Protection Agency, just Acolytes in general, I'm going to put on
they
there.
Were badass, yeah.
They looked like badass dudes. I mean, they really
I
did.
Agree.
And even the New Age Outlaws looked the part. Okay, they looked like they would be a team that you would get behind. There's really no tag team gimmick right now. There are gimmicks. They're all gimmicks. But there's really no tag team that looks the part other than the New Day, and I think, or maybe the Wyatts. So that's maybe why they did it. But,
true.
You know, I think the most Attitude Era-esque looking tag team right now, besides the Wyatts, is Jericho and Styles, because Jericho is an Attitude Era legend, and AJ Styles sort of has that defying authority type look. We haven't had something like that since The Shield, to be honest with you.
I agree. Good point.
And the Shield had the belts, and I still think, as I mentioned last week, the Shield's going to be back once Seth Rollins gets healthy.
Yeah, because he's going to come back. He's going to come back a face. You already know that.
He's going to come back a face, and he's going to come back. I feel personally that he's going to come back feeling a little like, you know, hey, you guys just kind of kicked me to the curb, and I got injured, and you know, I was your guy, and now, you know, I'm not. So I think he's going to come back and sort of have a little bit of a beef with the authority, and they're not going to take it, kind of a thing. Or he's going to come back and not going to like Shane, and is going to be sort of forming up with the Shield. They might turn the Shield heel. Who knows? So a lot of things could happen depending on what happens at WrestleMania between the Shane McMahon match. If the authority stays in power, okay, maybe he'll come back as face, reform the Shield, whatever. But if Shane McMahon, I just got this idea. If Shane McMahon comes back, okay, and he's going to be like, listen, I was the man, okay, he could still stay the man. He could still stay Triple H and Stephanie's guy. And he could reform the Shield because, remember, Roman's against them too.
Right.
And Dean is now against the authority. He could turn the Shield heel.
I could see that. Because you feel, you realize this, when Shane comes back, he's going to have his own stable too. So it's going to be, you know.
Yes, and you know, he has a knack, Shane does, throughout his career, of aligning himself with the big guys. Remember when the Ministry of Darkness was his thing. Well, the corporation first, but the Ministry of Darkness was his thing.
Right.
Then he came back, he endorsed the Big Show. He came back, he got behind, you know, the WCW guys, which were outsized a lot of the WWF guys at the time.
Right.
So, loves the big guys. I could see the Shield coming back as the protectors of authority. They were the Shield of Justice. They could be, you know, the protectors. I could just see the slogan right now, the protectors of authority, and see a Shield like the Wyatts being Shane's stable and having that tag team rivalry go on and have sort of Shane endorsing the Wyatts against the Shield. That would be, to me, that'd be great booking. I would love that.
And that would be best for business right there.
And that would have to be. As these matches, I really enjoy the bandana pants, by the way. It's a Divas match right now, Brie Bella, Naomi. Brie Bella, to me, oh, she taps. See, ever since Daniel Bryan left, they've been making her a jobber, man. I feel bad for Brie because they're making it seem like she just can't get it done on her own and that she's playing second fiddle to her sister, which is really kind of, to me, it's a shame because I think Brie's talented. I really do. But anyways, that's just off topic. I just got Raw in front of me here. Final 20 minutes of Raw. So it's weird to see a Divas match in the final 20 minutes of Raw. But hey, you know, they're the bookers. So that's what they do. As Lana now coming out to now, how are they going to do this? Because Lana doesn't fight. So how are they going to have any sort of beef between these two?
Yeah, well, I don't understand the booking here.
I mean, Lana, it's not like Lana can have her guy, Rusev, go up against, you know, Bree's guy and Daniel Bryan because Daniel Bryan's retired. Next, oh, look at this. Dean Ambrose versus Alberto Del Rio. Oh, that's what they did. Okay, they're making him face League of Nations guys instead. Okay, see, I'm still not sold on the League of Nations. I'm really not.
Oh, they're the worst stable in the history of wrestling. Yes, I said it, the worst stable. I mean, if you think about it, has Sheamus. He was a WWE World Heavyweight Champion, 5 months ago, and he's a jobber now?
Yeah, as soon as he lost the belt, he fell way off.
I mean, talk about a cash-in gone right and gone wrong at the same time.
And you know, guys like Stone Cold would lose the belt at a pay-per-view and come back and win it the next night on Raw. You know,
exactly.
And Sheamus just sort of faded into the abyss a little bit, which is kind of a shame because I think he's a talented guy. He looks stupid with his new haircut, just as the crowd lets him know every week. But I think he's a talented guy at least.
I love when Sheamus first came in, and I love when Jesse was on that Raw audition, and he was like, you know what, I'm going to give everybody who never won the belt an opportunity. Things like that, but that's what's missing in today's product.
Would you say, okay, so you say that they're the worst in the history, even over the Mean Street Posse?
Even over the Main Street Posse was more over than the League of Nations, absolutely.
True, just because of their affiliation with Shane, I guess.
I won't be surprised if we see our, you know, our Main Street Posse reunion at Mania.
That could happen. I don't know if all the guys are still alive. Let me click on them right here. But I think Joey Abs, Pete Gass, Rodney. Yeah, it looks like they all still are. Okay.
I wouldn't mind seeing them. And I'm pretty sure they're going to look in better shape than the Outsiders did coming into the aid of Sting at last year's WrestleMania.
True. For those of you who may not know the history of the Mean Street Posse, as of 2009, which is the last that my records go back, all three had retired from wrestling. Pete Gass now works for WB Mason, which is a company down there by New York near you. They're an office supply company, for those who might not know that. Rodney owns his own landscape management company in Glen Ridge, New Jersey, and Abs works at his family's car repair shop. So none of those guys are living the lavish life.
Oh, man.
So, you know, and they all got normal jobs. They're all normal guys. And, you know, it's funny. My uncle, who's a chef up here in the area in upstate New York, he knows Midian personally.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, he knows him. He used to live down they used to live down in Clearwater Beach, Florida, and that's where a lot of guys train. In fact, Hulk Hogan was a guy – well, Terry Bollea, I guess is his name, has the house down there in Clearwater. My aunt, my other uncle – they're divorced now, but my other uncle ran a parasail company. He still runs it down there. He's down there during the cold months up here and up here during the warm months. Hogan used to come in on his big boat all the time, and my aunt, you know, has blonde hair, and she still remembers, you know, seeing guys Sting, Macho Man, those guys. They used to train in the same gym as her. And he used to pull up in his big boat, Hogan did, and he used to call her Blondie. And he used to be like, oh, hey, Blondie, what's going on, you know? And so I've met Hulk several times. He was my favorite as a kid just because, we knew him. I don't know. I'm not saying I had him over for dinner, knew him, but I met him. And he was, you know, he's the nicest guy ever. And huge in person. You think he looks big on TV? He is a monster in person, even at his age.
Imagine.
But yeah. So they know all those guys. So he knows Midian, who, for those of you who may not be up to date on your trivia, Dennis Knight is his name. Dennis Knight is actually a chef as well. So it's really, it's one of those things where they went to the Culinary Institute together, CIA. So he still lives in Tampa as well. They sort of, a lot of these guys who weren't big-time tag team guys sort of have normal jobs now. You know, they kind of just do their own thing, and they've kind of faded off, and none of them are, you know, living a lavish life. They're kind of doing their own thing. Dennis Knight's a chef in Tampa. He has a tattooed eyeball on the back of his head, so he can't be bald anymore. It's kind of creepy, but he has that tattooed eyeball that he got as a member of the ministry. So, you know, but again, the Mean Street Posse. Okay, so Jason says worst in the history, which is still, okay, I'm going to go through a couple of these bad ones here.
Okay, let's do it.
Even more so than Los Conquistadors, which happened to be Edge and Christian, but Los Conquistadors, even worse than them?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Los Boricuas, who was Savio Vega, Miguel Perez, Jose Estrada, and Jesus Castillo.
Worse than them.
Wow. Okay. Let me see here. Pretty Mean Sisters. They didn't really do much. PMS, Terry, Jacqueline, Ryan, Shamrock. They didn't last long enough to count here.
Okay. Who would you take? League of Nations or what was the name of the cheerleading? Cheerleading squad. Spirit Squad.
Oh, Spirit Squad. I think Spirit Squad would beat I think League of Nations would beat Spirit Squad based on pure wrestling talent. I hated the Spirit Squad personally. A bunch of guys in stupid cheerleader outfits was a stupid angle to begin with, and to have those be your henchmen was even more stupid. They were pretty over at the time. They were the top tag team, one of them, just because of their affiliation with Vince. So, hey, I don't know. Real quick, who's hotter here between these two on TV, Sasha Banks or the Last Kicker, Becky Lynch?
Oh, man, I'm in love with Spud. I don't know. That wouldn't be a tough choice, you know, either way.
Jason's like, I do unforgivable things to Sasha Banks.
Yeah, pretty much.
You like the pink hair? You feeling the pink hair?
I'm feeling the pink hair.
Okay.
Wow, I didn't realize how much Charlotte looks like her dad.
Oh, a lot like her dad. And, you know, Becky Lynch, a little bit thicker. You know, she's old. Becky Lynch is almost 30. And Charlotte is 30, almost. Yeah, and Charlotte's turning 31.
Oh, wow. I thought they were younger.
Yeah, no,
ironically,
these girls are old. In fact, keep going.
I was going to say, ironically, I don't know if you know, but these are the same three ladies that's on Raw right now, are the same three that accompanied Triple H when he did the whole Terminator theme at last year WrestleMania.
Yes. Yes, sir, they are. I actually had forgotten about that. But yes,
yeah,
they are. Very, very good point. Just points are being dropped like bombs right now. Mercedes is Sasha Banks' real name. So Sasha Banks is 24. Sasha Banks was born she was born in 1992. I don't know how old that makes you feel. Becky Lynch, 29, born in 1987. And Charlotte, if I got it right here, this is why we need interns. Charlotte is 29 as well, born in 86, April 5th, 86. So, yeah, these girls are getting up there in age. And you look at, like, when Lita debuted, when Trish Stratus debuted, they were right around Sasha's age, 23, 24, 25, when they really started their careers. It makes me think that they won't have as prolonged of careers as some of those ladies did, because they're already older to begin with. I mean, by the time Trish Stratus was 30, she'd been the women's champion four times.
That's true.
So, you know, who really knows? Plus, we didn't really see any jobber women at the time. I mean, even Molly Holly, when she debuted, I think is better than what they're doing right now to Becky Lynch, who... Yeah, and Molly Holly's 38, so, I mean, obviously, she's a little bit older. We know Sable's older. But look at who's in NXT. Who's that girl? Bayley. She could be big time. And she's only 26.
I believe she's coming up after Mania. I wouldn't be surprised to see her right after Mania.
And she's only 26. Now, do you think that maybe they're having Charlotte hold the belt because they want to do sort of what they did with the AJ thing? When AJ came in and her first night on Raw took the belt. And then same thing again with Paige. Paige came in, took the belt on her first night. You think they want to keep that trend going a little bit?
I could see that happening. But I highly doubt that Charlotte's going to retain at Mania. It depends. If they want to push Sasha's next big thing, they might let her win at Mania. But
is it going to be a triple threat?
It's definitely going to be a triple threat. They're going to let the three NXT girls have the spotlight at Mania. I'll be surprised if they do it any other way.
As
but
Dean Ambrose gets set here. Keep going.
Dean should be in the main event to be fighting.
Nah,
Dean,
I don't know if he's ready for the main event yet.
You don't think he's ready yet?
I don't think so yet. He's good, but he's not WrestleMania main event quality yet. But you were making a point on these girls?
No, I was going to say, it's definitely let the NXT girls have their moment to shine, especially with the whole Divas Revolution and Paige not being in the picture right now. Let the three NXT girls have their moment. And then Bayley join the next night after Mania.
I could see it. I certainly could. Things are definitely trending up in the Divas division right now. Again, if anybody did want to call in, we had Peyton Manning call in last week. I actually have a special guest. I don't know if he's going to be able to call in tonight, but possibly next week calling in. But anybody who wants to, 713-955-0359, hit us up on the chat line as well, chat box. Go ahead and send us an email. Also, check out the Off the Ropes blog page on overtime.news. We're talking all sorts of wrestling. That's what this show is, the best damn 90 minutes of wrestling on the internet. And I know that there's a lot of wrestling podcasts, but what I like about this one is the fact that, yeah, there's some structure, but we're just kind of chilling. You know, just kind of chilling, talking wrestling, talking whatever. We're not really giving away prizes. We're just kind of just sitting here chilling, talking about wrestling as if we were doing it in person, which is what I think, you know, I really like the setup a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll definitely co-sign that.
And here's what I want to hear tonight, but we're not going to hear.
Here comes the money.
Here we go. Money talk.
Arguably the best thing I've heard in a long time.
If he was going to rank the McMahon theme song, who's number one, two, or three? In what order?
Ooh. Well, Stephanie's is I'm not a big fan of Stephanie's. I never was. I like that one a lot. I really do. But I think the No Chance in Hell has been sort of because of how it came about before the Valentine's Day Massacre, McMahon versus Stone Cold. I'm going to put No Chance in Hell at one and put Here Comes the Money at two and Stephanie at three just because of the history behind it. But, I mean, I could be wrong. Where do you put them at?
I'm going to have to put Vince at one because, I mean,
okay,
just looking at the history and just the way he just stacks the odds against everybody. I mean, who would have thought that the Montreal Screwjob, something that was not supposed to take place, gave birth to the greatest heel of all time? Well, think about that. If Brett didn't act it in the way he did and he stuck to the script, would we have Mr. McMahon character today? Probably not. Not to that degree.
Not to the degree that we did, but I don't necessarily know if it was the reaction of Bret Hart that made McMahon, because they were planning to do that for a while. And I think the fact that they screwed him at all was what made the McMahon character what it was. I think obviously Bret contributed to it by spitting on him and throwing a fit in the ring. But I think McMahon still would have been that big time heel. Although, like you said, yes, it may not have been quite the same and to the degree that it got to, no. But he still would have been a heel character.
Yeah. But it's amazing how that one thing changed everything.
Another thing I like is matches being able to be made sort of on the fly by a person you can see and hear. Instead of a bunch of suits sitting in a boardroom, I like when Mick Foley was commissioner. Okay, because Shawn Michaels didn't really do much as commissioner. He was sort of behind the scenes a little bit, and he'd make appearances every once in a while. But Mick Foley was that sort of in-your-face, would make matches, come out to the ring, do things. He was a great commissioner. I enjoyed him a lot as commissioner. I think, and we'll get to this segment, we'll end off with it, is what we think is best for business today. I think having somebody making matches like that, which is what I think that they're going to do with Shane, I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of him if he does end up getting the storyline sort of as a commissioner and as a matchmaker. Even with Eric Bischoff, who was technically the quote-unquote general manager, not the commissioner. And by the way, next week, for those of you who are watching Raw, and we'll get to this point again in a minute here.
Here comes the money.
Here we go. Money talk.
Shane will be back next week on Raw, they just announced. So that'll be cool to see Shane again, Shane O'Mac, especially with the pop that he got last week. But, no, I definitely think to see something like that, even an Eric Bischoff, who was more of a heel commissioner than he was a face commissioner or a general manager, whatever you want to call him, even somebody that you can see and hear and go to and watch live and make the matches on live, I just think it makes a lot more drama. Because, you know, something will happen in the ring, there'll be an interference, there'll be a whatever, and they can just come out and say, hey, you know what, okay, I'm going to put you guys in a match, blah, 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 and it brings the fans better experience than having, all right, well, there's an interference, well, now we're going to have a match, and it just kind of happens that way. I definitely think that having a commissioner, having a body, a voice like that is the best thing. Here's your buddies
totally,
in the ring right now.
Here's
your buddies,
agree.
The League of Nations.
Oh, The greatest heel faction in the history of WWE. Just think about all the championships amongst them, but yet they can't work as a heel, as a group to save their lives.
I think all of these guys, yeah, they're all great champions when they were champions, but they're all kind of guys that are sort of the forgotten bunch. I mean, they should call them the Lost Boys. They really should.
Like this time last year, Rusev was getting ready to ride into the ring of WrestleMania on a tank. He won't even be able to ride a moped this year. It's amazing the drop-off within a year.
He won't be able to hail a New York City cab right now. I mean, he is one of those guys that it's just he's faded into the abyss. Sheamus, the same thing. We mentioned what happened with him earlier. Wade Barrett's never really been that big of a star. His biggest thing was Nexus. Alberto Del Rio, I would say, was a big time for a while between the CM Punk and John Cena rivalries, was a champion who had a sort of a main event caliber But like even him, you know, he got hurt. He went away for a while. And now they're just kind of using him as the henchman for the Authority. And it's not him. They came back to put the U.S. title belt on him, and they took it away right away. So I don't like really what they're doing with him either.
Well, they got what, 5 more weeks to figure it out what they're going to do? I mean,
well, Wade Barrett's
going to
be gone soon. Wade Barrett announced he's not going to renew his contract. So League of Nations is going to be breaking up soon anyway. But then if they want to keep the stable around, which both of us, I think, hope they don't, they will then probably just add another ethnic group. They already have Hispanics, so it won't be like Kalisto making a heel turn. But they might – I don't even know who they'd put in, really, if they would have another real ethnic type thing. I don't even know who they would put in at
you know,
that point.
You know what? That's crazy. I'm looking at the League of Nations, and I don't think I've ever in my life, and all the time I've been on this earth, seen a Mexican, an Irishman, an Englishman, and a Russian – hanging out at the same time.
It's a valid point. I don't think I have either. They usually float in different circles. They hang with different people.
Exactly.
So yeah, usually, although you live in Brooklyn, which is one of the most diverse neighborhoods in the country, so who knows?
And still, I haven't seen that.
True. Maybe try Queens next week. You might see it.
You're right about that.
Queens has some diversity as well. But anyway, So I'm looking at this right now, and we talk about tag teams. We talk about how we don't like the League of Nations, but both of us, I think, like the Wyatts. We know Dustin, the co-founder of Overtime.News, the station that puts our show on, doesn't like the Wyatts. He's annoyed by the Wyatts. I enjoy the Wyatts personally. I just think it's booked really improperly.
Totally agree.
What would you do with the Wyatts if you had the opportunity? If you were given the keys to the castle, per se, what would you do with the Wyatts? How would you make the Wyatts relevant?
Honestly, would you put
belts on them or what?
I would turn the Wyatts into a combination of the Horsemen and the Ministry. And by combinations, I mean Bray Wyatt should have a title on him. If it's not the world title, at least the Intercontinental title. And then he has his henchmen protecting him at all times. You know, kind of the way the Horsemen did with Flair. Like, Flair had the belt. Flair did it, whatever he had to do to keep the belt. But he had Arn Anderson. He had the rest of the guys protecting him at all times. And they were such a great stable.
And then you look at the Ministry.
Really,
the Ministry was the same thing. Undertaker and the Ministry very rarely fought. Every once in a while, they'd have a match. But he just would stick the dogs on them, per se. So, yeah, I see what you're saying with that. But could they be successful that way, you feel, or...?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just being mysterious, they could have been doing the same thing Undertaker was doing for many years, coming out of nowhere, just popping up, beating people up, and retaining titles. Definitely thinking.
And you know, I don't think I've seen somebody take the punishment that Dean Ambrose takes and still gets up. I mean, Dean Ambrose, it's making me think, okay, are we going to see a Brock Lesnar appearance here in the last couple minutes of Raw? Who knows?
The way they're treating
what main event?
Dean
what
Flavo?
Does this do?
I don't know,
booking,
Dean...
this match does nothing.
Another mistake. You know what's sad about this, too? It's like, you're on a night like tonight, you're competing against nothing. There's no football. There's no real basketball games going on. Push the envelope. It's WrestleMania season. WrestleMania season, you're supposed to push envelopes all the time.
Well, I understand that this match was made by Triple H because Dean Ambrose challenged him for the title. But this match really doesn't make any sense because he's not the one who's going to be facing Triple H right now. This should be Roman Reigns in this match, as much of a snore fest as that is, would make more sense because Triple H wants to try to soften him up for Mania. But if he's facing a guy that's completely unrelated to any of these guys, what sense does it take to put him in this match? Like, why?
Maybe Triple H will come out here later on and beat him up just like he did Roman to send a message.
I mean, it's possible for sure, and you know they are best buddies and everything. But you know, it doesn't do it for me. And there's been a lot of matches that, you know, going back on the WWE Network and watching the way that they used to book things, 98, 99, 2000, and the storylines and the weeks and weeks and weeks of building that they used to have. One of them actually was I don't know if you remember from the year 2000, the Kane Jericho rivalry.
That was good.
That was awesome, and they would just keep building it. And the X-Pac and Kane rivalry before that, it would just keep building and building, and every week would be those two versus each other in a different kind of match or a different scenario, or a different thing would happen. This booking, whoever books for WWE right now, it's sporadic. They don't really have – they have one main storyline that's been going for a while. Other than that, it's willy-nilly. It's chaos. I mean, it's they'll put different guys up against different people every week. That really makes no sense. There's no long-standing rivalries right now.
I know. I mean, just look at Brock. I mean, Brock was eliminated at the Rumble against the Wyatt. It took all of the Wyatts to eliminate him, and that was never addressed again. Which made no sense.
Yeah, why don't you make a Brock Lesnar Wyatt family thing, or make Bray Wyatt versus Lesnar kind of a thing, or you know, something even that I would have even, as much as that would have been more of a 4-on-1 type of, you know, whatever. But even then, make something happen out of that. But it's just right now, I think that they're scrambling for ratings and they're putting all the big superstars against each other when there's really no sense behind it.
Again,
and, of course, you know, Dean Ambrose is going to win this match because that's what they think they need to do, you know.
With all the legal nation buddies hanging outside the apron and not be able to help, I just really hate this faction. I really do.
I mean, what is your beef with them other than, you know, other than the fact that they're a bunch of washed-up superstars who really the WWE has forgotten about? I think even though they're not technically – a faction, they're not technically attacked. The thing that they were doing with Ryback, Big Show, Kane, that was kind of stupid as well, but that was short lived. What is your beef with the League of Nations? I mean, I understand it, but yet again, I also don't understand it.
I just expected more. All that talent in one group, I just expected more.
Yeah, I hear that.
Amber's going to fly over the top rope and knock them all out. Great. This is great.
Predictable.
That's the business right here.
Predictable, of course. Well, the face, they've always been about the faces winning. I mean, every once in a while in their history, the heel would win. Oh, we called it. Here comes the game. What's up with us calling stuff? We called Triple H winning the Rumble. We've been calling a lot of stuff lately.
Loosening the tie. Taking
Although
the
he's
jacket.
Not in street clothes this time. He's in a suit still. So who knows? But Triple H, see, that to me, I enjoy. Even though he's an authority figure and doesn't wrestle, it just brings me back to Triple H being the champion that Triple H has always been. Oh, here we go. He's going to sick the dogs on him now. So, yeah, so you called it. They're going to come out and beat up Ambrose. But we're probably going to see a Roman Reigns interference here too, you'd imagine. Although the beating he took last week, he's probably – to have him come back would be rather unrealistic. This is the type of thing where you'd see Cena run in because Cena's the honorable guy, but he's not there either. So I really don't know what they're going to do here. If they're just going to decimate Dean Ambrose or – you know, Brock Lesnar. Now, if they had Brock Lesnar come out right now and throw the League of Nations guys around, yeah, that would make a little bit of sense, but it still wouldn't make all that much sense to me because – again, he's completely unrelated to any of these guys. He's not facing any of these guys. And he's not on TV enough to have a rivalry with any of these guys that's longstanding. So I don't know. I really don't know what's going to happen here. This is a little unpredictable, but yet at the same time, it's also kind of a snooze fest as well.
It would have been great if Triple H gave him a title match right now and then pinned him.
He might. He's got the mic. Turn this up a little bit, see what he's got to say. 20 minutes left to go here on the second edition of Off the Ropes. You can check this out at overtime.news or on a Blog Talk Radio search engine. You can sort of hear it in the background.
I think Triple H ad-libs on the mic. You know, he just can say whatever
he does.
Wants.
He always has. He always has. Oh, Ambrose with the shot. Okay. Yeah, Triple H is known for ad-libbing. He's always kind of – I like the fact, though, that he's not doing what he did back then, and you have a 20-minute game promo. And he used to talk so slow. I like the fact that he's a lot more articulate now. But, okay, so game gets the pedigree. I understand it. Fine, cool, all fine and dandy. I still cringe every time, ever since that quad injury, I still cringe every time he does that move.
Yeah.
So what, okay, is he going to finish his sentence? Okay. Give it to him. Oh. So he's not going to give it to him now, but he's going to give it to him. So I'm assuming maybe it's next week?
Oh, would that be awesome if it was a Mania?
It's not going to be Mania unless the way that they spin this is that they make it a fatal four-way, and they put Ambrose into the match, and then they put Lesnar in. But I let's see what Ambrose has to say here. Going for the comedy aspect there. Dean Ambrose just says thanks. So it's 11:10. Remember how we said last week it's good to see Raw get off the air at 11:05? Here it is, 11:10. And then Triple H is again, to me, it makes absolutely no sense, though. It makes zero sense.
It doesn't make zero sense.
Because
they must have, like, all the power over USA Network to always run overtime.
They must. They have to. But to me, it makes no sense. He's got his match set up for Mania. I mean, this is really kind of, I guess, really, they don't have anybody else with all the injuries and stuff. But it makes no sense to me. Why is this happening right now? Dean Ambrose is out of the title picture in the equation. This is really what they're doing right now, is they're scrambling for ratings. They want Attitude Era type stuff. And they know that the fans want Attitude Era type stuff. So that's what they're going to do. But from the grand scheme of things, in terms of storylines, makes no sense. Why? Like, why are they bothering with this? The only thing I can see here is what I just said, and is that they're going to put Ambrose into the main into the title match at Mania, and then Lesnar's going to come out, Heyman's going to bitch and complain, and then they're going to make it a fatal four way. That's the only thing I can see that might make sense coming out of this, because there's no point in him beating up Ambrose. But for what reason? He's not in the title match. You have to focus on I don't know. Yeah, you have to focus on Reigns if you're the champion. But hey, it's chaos, and that's what made them famous. So maybe that's what they're doing. Who knows?
That'd be awesome, though. What if Shane beats the Undertaker and throws in someone else into the main event? Let's say like a Seth Rollins.
Or puts both those guys in it. I could see it.
Yeah.
I certainly could. Now this is old Triple H. This is the Triple H that I'm used to seeing. With 17 minutes left to go here on Over the Ropes, and we're going to we have one last topic here to discuss after this, but. Oh, even JBL just said it. We haven't seen anything like this since the Attitude. See, I thought that was dead and buried. I didn't think they were going to mention that again.
No, they need to mention it. They need to, like,
it's one of those chapters that I thought that they put away, you know? Huh. It's like CM Punk. They're never going to mention him again, even if it's a reference to something that he did. They won't mention him on TV. I thought Attitude Era was sort of the same way. They won't mention it. So at 11:13, it's going to be it. So they're either going to give him the title match next week, but then that messes up the main event of WrestleMania. So obviously now we know what's going to happen. So, to me, the only thing they can do here is put him in the Mania main event. It's the only thing that they can do here.
But this is WWE we're talking about. I can clearly see Brock screwing him from winning the title, and that always adds more fuel to the fire for WrestleMania between those two.
Oh, so then maybe then it becomes a triple threat again and a repeat of what we saw at Fastlane, perhaps?
Could be.
Huh. Either way, I'm a little head-scratching about that ending. But, hey, who knows? We'll see. It's been better. It's been the two better endings than I've seen in the last 5 years, the last 2 weeks. So I will take it for sure. Final topic here, and I think we can spend 15 minutes on it, but maybe not. If not, we can always recap a little bit here of what we've talked about. But what do you think right now? They love to throw those three words around, best for business. At this point, what should they do that is best for business? Should they bring back what we just saw, which is an Attitude Era type thing? Should they keep the PG thing going and maybe – maybe make it PG-13 a little bit and sort of try to spin that to make it work? Or should they just start from scratch completely and create a new identity for WWE? Like, what direction are they going in here?
I think they need to go on a better mixture of PG and Attitude Era. Because think about it. If we're in the PG era right now, with Cena out, who's really the PG guy?
You know, it was gonna be Reigns, but the crowd hates him.
Exactly. So, you know, I think the crowd is letting you know that, hey, we appreciate authenticity. You know, we appreciate the old Attitude Era, or at least John Cena, who at least knew that some people liked him and he knew some people loved him. So, you know, that's they need to like.
It doesn't matter what you think.
That's definitely my answer. I'm going, you got to go Attitude Era. I mean, that is what sold you the tickets. That is what made you the money. That is what I think anybody that's around our age remembers. You've got to do it. I mean, the concussion thing, whatever, it's 2016. You can find a way to hit him in the head with a chair and not give him a concussion. I mean, guys didn't used to get him all the time back then. Why are they all of a sudden afraid they're going to get him now? There are ways to do it.
I actually think the legitimacy of all these injuries are good for business because it's letting people know, like, hey, you really can get hurt out there if you're not careful or not doing things properly.
But you notice we didn't have really these kind of injuries at, you know, in the Attitude Era. Guys in the Attitude Era seem to have a longer shelf life a little bit. They seem to be out there every single week, every single pay-per-view in brutal matches, and there was never an issue. I don't know.
Stone Cold.
I'm not sure.
Stone Cold competed with a broken neck. He finished his match with a broken neck.
True. But I just don't see it. I don't know. I mean, I could be a little off base here. I just, to me, it is one of those things where the Attitude Era is what sold you the tickets. It's what made you famous. Go back to that. You don't really have a choice at this point. I think with as bad as the stock is right now, with as bad as the ratings are, you don't have a choice. That's what people want. They've been wanting it for years. I think that your true PG era guy, which is the Yes Man Daniel Bryan, is gone. So he was the one who was really the face of this whole PG movement. People will argue that it's Cena. It was Daniel Bryan. People are still doing the Yes chant. I think now that those guys are gone, Cena's at the tail end of his career, you've got to get a little bit more physical, got to get a little bit more violent. I'm not saying that there's got to be blood and sledgehammers and chairs every single show, but you've got to start making a little bit more darker storylines. You've got to start making stuff and ending shows like what we saw these last 2 weeks. You have to because people are getting bored, and they've been bored for years.
Speaking of darker and a little, you know, bullying, did you see Ryback tonight?
I actually missed that one. I was watching the Syracuse game. What happened with that?
Well, he was like, you know, extra, you know, he beat Adam Rose with, you know, the whole social
Which is
misfits.
The reason
right,
why he's facing
he
Adam Rose is stupid to begin with, but okay.
Well, before the match, he did a little quick promo talking about, you know, if he's not, you know, if opportunity is not coming his way, he's just going to seize it and take it. And he went on to put a beating, like he put a real beating on this guy. And I'm like, that's what's missing now. You got these big guys who are being soft, who are portrayed soft. You know, they got to be out there physical. You know, they should be able to beat up someone like Adam Rose, like make it look convincing. And that's what he did tonight. And I thought that was a, you know, step in the right direction for his character, because he should be a bully.
A guy of his size should be, yeah. I mean, guys, if now, put it this way, though. If you had guys like Ryback back in the Attitude Era, would they have been the champion or at least have better storylines than they have? Because Ryback is the biggest guy I've ever seen. Just like Dan Marino, the best quarterback to never win a Super Bowl, he's the biggest, brutish, most, you know, just ridiculously roided up to that I've ever seen to not really have a major storyline that I can remember.
I agree. He should definitely.
So, do you think he would be champion back in the day, or at least have a better storyline?
He would definitely have a better storyline. Definitely.
Because, I mean, you know, Vince has that love affair with big guys. So,
oh,
I mean, perhaps.
Sure does.
Yeah, so perhaps maybe he would have had him be one of the, you know, top contenders or something, or at least would have made him seem, because they're doing the same thing now with Mark Henry. I understand he's old, he's washed up, he's whatever, but they're making these big guys now into jobbers. Big Show won tonight, and I have to say, hey, I'm surprised. I mean, I know it was Kevin Owens, but Kevin Owens is on the rise right now. He's, you know, he's got a belt around his waist, and you have a guy, Big Show, who has been pretty much a 7 foot, 500 pound jobber for the past year and a half, go out and beat your Intercontinental Champion. How does that make any sense?
That doesn't make no sense.
I mean, if you're going to be
a
WrestleMania. Yeah, well, I mean, if you're going to make the guy a jobber, keep him a jobber. You know, don't have the Big Show, who is more than willing. He's a great guy, you know, outside the ring and in his personal life. He's more than willing to put guys over. If he's going to be a jobber, why don't you have Kevin Owens sort of, you know, step up to the plate a little bit? You have Kevin Owens sort of be, you know, okay, well, I'm going to take on the challenge. I'm going to take on the largest athlete in the world. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to show that I'm Intercontinental Champion. I'm going to win and take on the Big Show. No, you have him lose and lose a lot of his momentum going into the biggest pay-per-view of his career to date. And I don't get it. I mean, I understand that, you know, they're starting to be a little bit more realistic because Big Show has always been sort of that dominating character, but you don't have him beat your Intercontinental Champion if he hasn't won a match of value in the last year and a half.
Exactly. Don't reward him
and
with
now,
that.
Now, I'm reading something here. Dolph Ziggler's a heel now?
When did that happen?
I'm looking at something here. They're talking about heel Ziggler. They're thinking about maybe making Dolph Ziggler a heel. Huh. I don't know how that's going to happen. I don't see him. He's sort of like a pretty boy. Unless they make him like the next Seth Rollins, but I don't know.
That won't work. I mean, he was a heel before with Vicky. It made sense with AJ. It made sense. Now it doesn't make sense because back, you know, the talent roster now is just so, you know, his position was filled with guys like AJ Styles now, the Nevilles, the Seth Rollins. These guys are like Ziggler, but only better. So I don't see him being a heel make any difference. I think Ziggler is another one of those guys who might want to look at not re-signing and maybe heading on to TNA.
And, you know, I think that might happen a lot, too. Like, if people don't get the opportunities that they want here. Because right now it seems like they're pretty set in their ways with what they want
right,
and what
exactly.
They're going to do. So, and right now you've got a couple guys up near the top. I'm going and watching the year 2000 on the throwbacks at WWE Network, and it was complete chaos. I mean, Kurt Angle came out of nowhere and won. And actually, it's funny. Kurt Angle became the WWE, back then it was WWF, champion for the first time ever in his career right here in my hometown, the Pepsi Arena in Albany, New York. So
now
it's called the Times Union Center, but it's called Pepsi. That's when he first won it. So I was you know, but he came literally out of nowhere ever since winning the King of the Ring, and then, you know, he took off from there. But it was complete chaos. There was guys that were in the title considerations. They would throw Kane in the mix. They'd throw Undertaker in the mix. They would have, you know, guys would challenge for title shots out of the blue randomly, and they'd get them. Now it's like they don't even have that kind of chaos. They have Reigns and Triple H and maybe Ambrose, and that's it. Lesnar, perhaps. But all the guys that are quote-unquote mid-card seem to sink and stay in the mid-card for pretty much their entire career. And guys aren't getting the same kind of opportunities because you don't have to win the belt to be put over. People think you have to win the belt in order to be quote-unquote over. You don't. You can challenge for it, push them to the limit, like what they did with when Cena was doing the U.S. Open Challenge and they had Sami Zayn come in.
The cost of personality. I know your anger. I know your dreams. I've been everything you wanna be. Oh, I'm the cost of personality. Like Mussolini.
Yes, I'm pretty sure that was Dustin Bourque we had coming and messing with us right now. Let me see if we can get him on the line here.
Wasn't that the most boring ending of Raw we've seen in, like, the longest time?
No. No, it was not. It was something that I think that they needed to do because I've seen Raw endings that I'm like, what? Why? It was the most vanilla thing ever. At least they're going back into what made them popular with the Attitude Era.
Yeah, but you gotta do something more than just leave them sitting on a table that hasn't even been broken.
Yeah, true.
I mean, what was
again,
the point of putting them on the table? You could have punched them in the head 20 times on the mat.
True.
Yeah, true. Maybe they weren't thinking a little bit.
Yeah, that was the biggest amount of like wrestling blue balls I've had in at least 10 years.
So you wanted to see Dean go through the table because you don't like Dean, or because you wanted to see that kind of chaos and violence?
No, because I thought the new way was going to be, apparently we're breaking people's noses and bringing the Attitude Era back, blood and all that good stuff. And I think this, unfortunately, isn't enough to maybe warrant a Shield reunion. I could have seen if Triple H literally had the League of Nations just dismember Dean in the middle of the ring. Now you're talking Roman out, Dean out.
Which is what I thought was going to happen originally.
Maybe, right. Yeah, maybe next week Triple H comes out, taunts it, laughs, blah, blah, blah. Then they come out together, get beat down by League of Nations again, and then you can have like that whole Triple H back in the day and Spirit Squad. When he's like, I used to be good at this whole, you know, gang warfare thing. Maybe I should make a call. Like, they could do that with Rollins and bring him back. But they have to be put in the amount of stress that, you know, needs to be warranted. Meaning, like, they got to be beat down enough to the point where they look for help. Right?
Yes and no. And, you know, I don't know how much of the show you've been listening to. We sort of talked a little bit about that, why I think that if Shane McMahon comes back, he tends to endorse the big guys. Big Show,
yeah,
the Ministry
that.
Of Darkness, things like that. He's going to come back, I think, and he's going to take the Wyatts under his wing. I think the Shield comes back and takes a complete turn, and they become sort of the protectors of the authority, and it's going to be Shield versus Wyatts, which I think is finally going to be some good booking for the Wyatts. But again, that is more to come next week, only about 1:40 left to go. Jason Cordonaire, Chris McSwiggin here. You can hear us every Sunday on Satellite Sundays, Overtime.News. Jason, you want to plug your page real quick?
Yeah, check out Friday Night Clicks, premieres this Friday, 9:30. We're going to talk all things pop culture. We're going to talk a little bit about what happened at the Oscars. And whatever happens between now and Friday, we'll have you covered.
Beautiful, beautiful. And, you know, Dustin, the co-founder here, he's got a lot of articles that go up. He's Overtime.News is his baby. He's all over that place. He's also the co-host with me on Satellite Sundays. Dustin, you want to plug anything before we get out of here?
No.
Bring back the Attitude Era.
And on that note, bringing back the Attitude Era. Yes.
Realistically, that's the answer, is bringing back the Attitude Era. That's what you
think. For me, it is. And we can get
it. It doesn't matter what you think.
We'll get into this.
Hit my music.
Call me.
The cost of something I would be.
A cult of personality.